The EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider. I just wanted to tell you I'll be away for a bit on vacation, but my terrific colleagues and friends at EWTN Radio will be preparing a Best Of series in my absence. So sit back this weekend and enjoy a special listening adventure. Welcome to Vatican Insider and a new and exciting weekend because my guest this week on Vatican Insider is Jesuit Father Thomas Smolich, the International Director of JRS, the Jesuit Refugee Services, and he's the personal delegate of the Jesuit Superior General, Father Arturo Sosa. So, Father, welcome to Vatican Insider.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to chat.
And I have to tell my listeners, the JRS has a really terrific and comprehensive website. Whoever does that, kudos to
Thanks.
Them.
Thanks very much.
And it's very simple. It's JRS.net. Now, Father, the site says, inspired by the generous love and example of Jesus Christ, the Jesuit Refugee Service, JRS, is an international Catholic organization with a mission to accompany, serve, and advocate on behalf of refugees and other forcibly displaced persons that they may heal, learn, and determine their own future. And the website also describes your vision, a world where refugees and other forcibly displaced persons attain protection, opportunity, and participation. And Father, before we go into your work, I think it's important, I just kind of added this at the last moment, but it does behoove us to mention that a fellow Jesuit, Pope Francis, he heads the Vatican's Section for Migrants and Refugees in the Dicastery for Integral Human Development. He wanted to head that himself, we all know. Mm-hmm. That's a concern of his. But Father, let's go back a bit to when and why Jesuit Refugee Service was created, how did you become involved, etc.
Sure. My own story, or the story of JRS, we were founded in 1980 by our then Superior General, Father Pedro Arrupe. Father Arrupe, who was originally Basque, but had spent most of his life in Japan as a missionary, had been through the atomic bomb in Hiroshima, and in a sense knew what it was like to accompany people with very limited options who really were in great suffering. He was very moved by the situation of the Vietnamese boat people. At those of us who can remember in the late 70s, right around 1980, over a third of the people who left the country by boat died either due to pirates, their boats collapsed, whatever happened. He said, we have to do something. So he called provincials together from literally all over the world and said, let's figure out what we can do to accompany these refugees. And so out of that experience, JRS was born. Jesuits, sisters, other volunteers started working in refugee camps all over Asia, accompanying the Vietnamese people who were looking for a better life. Because we were Jesuits, of course, we couldn't sit on our hands. We wound up teaching. We wound up teaching English. And I think made a real difference in one of the most successful refugee settlements has been that of Vietnamese refugees in Canada, Australia, our country. And just that English preparation made a big deal. Interestingly enough, right around that same time, the first wave of Ethiopian refugees came here to Rome.
Really?
And out of that inspiration, the Jesu Church, which is one of our key churches here in Rome, the back end is on Via Astalli. We set up what is called Centro Astalli. It's JRS Italy. So this sense recognition of the needs of refugees was always there. And it was Father Arrupe who said, let's do something. That was in 1980. Then we started working with the Cambodians on the Thai border. And we started working in other parts of Africa. And somewhat like literally from the ground up, grew a country office and a regional office, and ultimately the organization, which is known as JRS. But it was Father Arrupe's inspiration in 1980.
Well, as a matter of fact, I read on your website that in 2018, JRS served almost 680,000 people. Mm-hmm. I just had to read that twice when I saw it on the website, because that is so awesome. And so tell us how you do serve refugees. What are your priorities, and what are their priorities?
Sure. That's a great question. Thank you for asking what are their priorities, because we can always think we've got all the answers.
Right.
But what we found, so back to your other question, we are now working in 56 countries.
Wow.
In Europe, every continent except Antarctica. I would say the key feature or the key dimension of what we do, and it is part of that statement that you had uttered earlier, is to accompany refugees.
Right.
The key thing for us is to walk with folks, listen to their stories. We've come to realize that these are people who have been through a lot.
Things that you and I can't even imagine.
Things that you and I cannot and would not want to imagine, quite frankly. And yet they are very resilient. People feel that God has brought them to this place. People of deep faith, no matter what that faith might be. And so our way of doing this, or our way of proceeding, is really to listen and to figure out, in the panoply of needs that they might have, what might we be able to do? More often than not, we're not an emergency provider. We are not like the Red Cross, who comes in with, you know, acres and acres of blankets.
Right.
And though if there's a need for that where we are,
we
happily do it. We tend to be served best where accompanying people where they have landed, wherever that might be from home, accompanying them as some healing and putting their lives back together might happen, and then figuring out, okay, what's the next step?
Right.
And then deciding what we do to accompany those groups that makes the most sense. So, you know, there are some organizations which do the same thing everywhere. We really try and listen closely. We have four priorities right now, which is, I would say, it's not the only things we do, but if we're focusing on things, one is reconciliation.
Hmm.
In a sense, building a sense of reconciliation with oneself. A lot of times,
interesting.
A lot of trauma has really broken people's lives. Oneself, sometimes one's family.
I guess you don't see your own worth.
You don't see your own worth, your family, your neighbor. You can wind up in a refugee camp or around the corner from someone who is on the other side of that conflict. A lot of times, especially, reconciliation or social cohesion is needed among the refugee community and the local community. It can be very difficult when resources are scarce or languages are different. So we're really working on that sense of, in a sense, helping people integrate or reintegrate their lives and their communities. Our second priority is education. Like I said, we are the Jesuit Refugee Service. If we weren't doing education, we would be foolish. Depending upon the country, we do everything from preschool to post-secondary education. We have a priority on teacher training because we believe in the quality of education.
Sure.
And many of the people we serve were teachers back home or want to be able to do that. We're also putting a strong focus on girls' education. Keeping girls in school.
Because so many societies do not prioritize
so
girls'
many societies
education.
Do not prioritize girls' education. And I think all of us can imagine that the outcomes for a 14-year-old who is not in school, especially if that is a girl, are not particularly good.
No.
Staying in school makes a huge difference. Our third priority right now is livelihoods, giving people the skills, the tools they need so that they can earn a living. And do what all of us do. They want to put food on the table for their families and send their children to school. This goes back to St. Pope John Paul's encyclical on the dignity of work.
Oh,
being able to do something to play a constructive part in society and to support my family is huge. And I think the niche that we are particularly working in is working with high school graduates or people who weren't able to finish high school but have that capacity to find work, which is something that they want to do and that makes it, and where there are actually jobs in that area. We're calling this our Pathfinder program.
Okay.
So that's our newest program, especially working on this question of livelihoods, employment. And the final one is advocacy. It's often translated in Romance language as defend or defending refugees, giving people the voice to be able to speak up for their own needs. So those are our priorities. We do other things. We do some medical accompaniment.
Right.
We also do, obviously, some work with people who are particularly in need, oftentimes elders in camps whose families have moved on, have particular needs for food and companionship. That's another area that we work in. But again, being a Jesuit organization, we take education and all its components pretty seriously.
Well, you know, actually, that was one of my favorite spots on your website.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, some of the testimonials from people you've helped, from young people, who have rediscovered their own worth as a human being, who got an education, who now see a path to life, to earning, to helping their family. Those different stories were so wonderful. But on the back to school program, tell our listeners, like you said on the site, or the site says, you know, along comes September, it's back to school, but not for everybody on the earth, and particularly for categories of people like refugees. Yeah. But why should they be deprived of going back to school, right? So tell us.
Absolutely.
How we can help.
Well, we want to keep kids in school. School provides security, it provides safety and protection, but it also gives a young boy, a young girl, a future. And we do all sorts of educational things, from actually running the schools to providing school supplies to providing uniforms. Sometimes there may not be tuition, but there are fees that need to be paid. So if you look at our website, jrs.net, you will notice on our education page there are opportunities to support our efforts to send primary children back to school, secondaries, people in college, with things like books, with things like uniforms and backpacks. Well, and these are you know, relatively small things, but make a huge difference in the life of a young person. It keeps her in school.
Absolutely. A number of years ago, when I was on the board of regents of Marymount International School here in Rome, I had become friends with the Iraqi ambassador to the Holy See, talking about the problems in his country and kids going back to school and not always girls being able to go to school. I got Marymount interested in a project. We called it Backpack Iraq. We got the students, all their families involved, and they had to bring backpacks with school supplies, and then we'd stick in something extra, maybe a toy for a younger student or whatever. And we got, through the relative of a person who worked at the U.S. Embassy, we were able to ship an enormous number of filled backpacks to Iraq, through, as I say, embassy and I think U.S. Air Force or something, privileges. But you say backpack to me, I can be in a store today and see a backpack and I think of that. And the delight the kids have in opening those gifts, because we had them tell us about that.
It's a big deal, and we appreciate it.
And the local community
any
often becomes involved too, right? That's where you have your volunteers. You might have a volunteer 20-something-old who teaches English.
It's amazing how many volunteers and refugees, actual members of the refugee community, who participate in our work. Legally, if someone is designated a refugee, she or he cannot earn a salary from a group like us. We might give them a small stipend. But people put in many hours, long hours, and they're very dedicated. Like any parent is, like any brother or sister is, caring about their younger siblings, mothers and fathers who want a better future for their kids. I always tell people, you know, and obviously in this point in our history, there's a lot of anti-refugee sentiment out there, or anti-migrant sentiment out there. And I don't want to go in, the political issue isn't what I would want to talk about here. But I think people say, well, how do you change this? How does JRS change this? And I say, listen to someone's story, and you'll find out that the story of a refugee sounds like my story, or my father's story, or my grandmother's story. It's the human story of looking for safety, looking for a way to make a difference, making sure that my son or daughter has the opportunity for a better life than I have.
Okay, I've been a Catholic for 5 years, but I suffered under a lot of things due to my Protestantism as a Pentecostal, and I just want to personally ask God to bless you for your ministry, for everything you do, and the help that you give people.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
EWTN is everywhere. EWTN radio programming is provided free of charge to over 500 domestic and international AM and FM radio stations. It's a great teaching tool for Catholics and non-Catholics alike. For a complete list of EWTN AM and FM stations across America, visit EWTNradio.net. At the bottom of the page, click Affiliates. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
We pray because we want to come into union with God. He wants to breathe His life into us, and we want to accept that life, because in accepting that life, we begin to experience the abundance that He has in mind for us to receive. Pray to God. Lift your praises high to God and present to Him every supplication, that you might find the grace you need for the present moment that He presents to you. Everything good comes from prayer, says Mother Teresa of Calcutta, and so it is true.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to part two of my conversation with Jesuit Father Thomas Smolich, the International Director of JRS, Jesuit Refugee Service. I think perhaps people have in their minds a physical image of a refugee as being this person with only the clothes on their back. They have no education. They're poor as, you know, church mice. But in reality, they're escaping a situation which is not of their making. It could be war, violence, politics, many other reasons. But they could be teachers and dentists and farmers, people who know a craft.
Absolutely. I mean, when in most of the situations that we work in, when we're working with refugee communities, they represent a broad spectrum of the community where they have come from. I was in Angola a few years back with working with a Congolese community, which has now been able to go back. I was amazed at how many teachers were among that group, and they were doing the teaching of their children in these schools that we were able to set up. So again, they're very talented people. They want to make a difference, and especially, and in many situations, I know, unfortunately, people cannot imagine being able to go back home. They want to make a contribution to the community where they're living. They want to make a contribution where they land.
Well, most people don't want to leave the community they're in. When you have extreme violence, when you have, it could be hatred among tribes,
exactly.
I don't know.
It can be,
when you've got a war, you don't have a choice either.
You don't have a choice.
Whether
you're
poor, rich, well-educated or not, you don't have a choice.
Leaving your country is usually the last option.
Sure.
There's the straw that breaks the camel's back,
right.
Or it can be a threat in the middle of the night. It can. We've certainly heard stories, you've got 24 hours to leave.
Yeah.
And people literally say, as you said, with the clothes on their back, they sell what they can to get a little money together, and they leave. The disorientation, the trauma in that is stunning. And I think, you know, as you earlier said, the stories that happen on the road are not pretty stories either.
Can't be.
And
yeah.
Especially for women, especially for young women, I think it can be a very traumatic experience.
Sure.
I mean, all of us in JRS have heard some of these stories, and we know there are more. And so how do we provide
societies that support us as women?
Yeah.
I can't picture myself having lived in the society that supports a woman's right to everything. I can't imagine living in a society where you're a second or third class citizen, or living in a society that something has so overwhelmed that nation, I have to leave. I have to leave my home. I can pack one suitcase, maybe.
Right.
I can't even imagine it, to be honest.
Yeah. You know? No, absolutely right. And so many folks, that is their story. And yet, in telling that story, in telling where, again, I'm always amazed at, and I have a couple people in particular in my mind who have said, you know, God is with me in this. I know that God has kept an eye out on me and my family.
Wow.
And in a sense, JRS, as a Catholic, as a Jesuit organization, we welcome that, because people's faith lives and people's faith communities are very important to us. We welcome them as members of a faith community ourselves.
And I know Bishop Robert Baker, when there was the hurricane, some storm that devastated Alabama and surrounding states a couple of years ago, I know that the staff of EWTN was allowed something like 3 days off with pay to go out and help people. And the bishop was with them at one point, and he said, "We don't do this because they're Catholic. We do it because we're Catholic."
We are Catholic.
You know,
exactly. It is our call.
Sure.
Because we are Catholic, we are called to make a difference.
Speaking of Catholic and Catholic TV, you did tell EWTN recently about something having to do with a religious minority in Iraq, the Yazidis, that program?
Yes, it was last month, I think, a few weeks ago, where we had a campaign on our website, in our media, Facebook and all of that, acknowledging the fifth anniversary of the displacement of the Yazidi community,
right,
in northern Iraq, in that which is often called Kurdistan.
Kurdistan.
And I had a great conversation with the EWTN commentator, who, by the way, is a Jesuit high school grad from Dallas.
Good for him.
talking with him, and certainly religious minorities have suffered in all of these wars. And the Christian minorities, whether they be Catholic or Orthodox, have also suffered greatly in Iraq and other,
right,
other parts of that part of the world. But the Yazidi crisis is a particularly horrible one. I think all of us have images 5 years ago of all these women, mostly women, some older people on this mountain,
yes,
literally surrounded by ISIS troops. The number of women who were brought into sexual slavery, the number of people, mostly women, who are still missing, the tragedy of children who were born in these situations who are not accepted by anyone. The campaign that we did was a way to highlight the fact that these folks are still there. They still feel very vulnerable.
Right.
The good news is many of the Christians have been able to return to Karakush and other places where feel relatively safe. Most of the Yazidis have not been able to do that. One of the programs that we have in northern Iraq specifically works in, it's the area called Sharia. We work with internally displaced people there, mostly Yazidi, offering psychosocial services, helping them study to pass the high school exams, helping young boys and girls, and also working in this area of livelihoods, giving folks some training so that they can, in a sense, generate some income and make a difference for their families. But it's that psychosocial piece which is very important. One of the things that we have learned is, without attending to people's, we might say, soul or spirit or psyche, it's very difficult to do much else. So, and healing often involves things like education and livelihoods,
sure,
and all. But so it's a way of saying, God's care is for you. And how do we figure out what makes a difference?
And it's a way of your priorities matching their priorities.
Exactly.
You know?
Back to your point. Listening to what would make a difference for them and doing our best to meet that need.
Father Smolich, we're getting to the end of our time together. It's my first visit here, so I'll be back. But the end of our time for this program. And I'd love to know, what are some of your biggest challenges, both JRS as an organization and then yours personally in doing this work? The challenges and also the joys.
So I'm going to start with the joys. The joys are meeting the people that we serve, hearing their stories, hearing the hope, the sense of God, however they describe God in their lives, realizing that we play some part in that because they're willing to talk to me, or they've come to a JRS,
sure,
center, or they recognize something that we are doing. That's a real joy. The other joy I have to tell you is going out into the field is meeting our staff.
I mean, oh, I bet.
Incredibly dedicated people from a variety of backgrounds. As I say, you're the hands of JRS. I'm not. But to meet them, to experience their dedication and their real sense of accompaniment, their real love for the people that we serve. I also have to say, one of the other joys is periodically, unexpectedly, running into someone who somehow was touched by JRS in her life or his life years ago. A couple of years ago, I was in Columbus, Ohio, working with some of the people who support us. And I met a woman there who was originally from Rwanda, who somehow got to our refugee camp in Malawi, was given a year's scholarship to university in Zimbabwe. She is now a Methodist minister. She's a fundraiser.
Wow.
And she's helping us do education in Chad. Claudine, thank you very much, if by chance you are hearing this. So those stories move me tremendously. What are the challenges? It's never easy to have to move. And I think right now it's especially difficult to move in some places. The Pope has talked about the Mediterranean as a watery cemetery. certainly that's a tragedy which is avoidable. I'm not an open borders person. I'm not saying everybody comes. But certainly all of us need, and all of us, I would say from a Christian point of view, have an obligation to help people. So I think we've sort of lost that most human part of us. So that saddens me. It saddens me that fear and anxiety have become the decision makers or the sort of drivers in the way we treat other people. Yes, there's lots of fears, but I think we're called to be something deeper than that. And the other, I guess, challenge I would say is that, and I don't want to go into, there's never enough money, there's never enough of that. But I think it's a question of, you know, imagination. How can we imagine our communities welcoming refugees? Mm. How can we imagine what they can do in a positive way? So much of what we hear out there, as you were saying, is very negative. We have these stereotypes. And I think some of this is, and as I said,
the stereotype is the problem,
The way to change it is to hear somebody's story. And I've never met somebody who heard somebody's story who wasn't at least able to say, oh, you know, ranging from I didn't know that to that could have been me, or that was my grandmother, whatever the case might be.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm sorry we've come to the end of our time today, but there will be other stories. There will be follow-ups. I will put the link, obviously, on my blog.
Thanks very much.
Some of the other pictures to create this awareness. And I simply want to say my mom and I, for many years, she began emailing at the age of 85. And we signed off our letters with, God sit on your shoulder. And that's how I want to say to you, to your staff here, and to all the volunteers, God sit on your shoulder. So thank you, Father Smolich.
Joan, thank you very much for this time, and may God continue to sit on your shoulder as well.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to the Best of Vatican Insider while I'm on vacation. And thanks to my EWTN colleagues and their hard work in preparing this week's program. Come back next weekend for another special listening adventure.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.